John wrote to me and asked about selling a customer list in a small business. Is it something that can be done? Let's discuss this week.
I'm David C. Barnett, and you're tuned in to Small Business and Dealmaking, the podcast, YouTube channel, and blog, where I talk about buying, selling, financing, and managing small and medium-sized businesses while controlling risk. So if you're looking to take control of your future through buying a business one day, or if you already own a business and you're looking to grow or exit, you've come to the right place. I talk about interesting things, I talk to interesting people, and I answer your questions every week right here. So be sure to hit like and be sure to hit subscribe, and let's get to it. Are you thinking of growing your business or beginning a journey into entrepreneurship? Take a shortcut to success by buying an existing and profitable business the right way. Visit businessbuyeradvantage.com and learn more about my online training, group coaching, and consulting services designed to help you win.
All right. So let's imagine, if you will, a very small business, and it could be a service business of some kind, either blue collar or white collar. So it could be an electrical company or a plumber or, you know, something like an accounting service, bookkeeping service. And somebody builds up a cohort of clients, and they build an income for themselves. Okay. So maybe they're earning $100,000 a year or something like that, and they're doing pretty well. Can that person sell their business? Well, a lot of people with a very small business like that will often try to sell. And what they'll do is they'll come online to channels like mine, and they'll start learning about buying and selling businesses. And they'll read some articles, and they might find perhaps that small businesses sell for 2x discretionary cash flow. And so here's the problem, is if you take that small plumbing business that, you know, maybe is one van and going out and does business every day, and that person has a discretionary cash flow of $100,000, and you multiply that by two, that person might believe that they have a business worth $200,000. But for any buyer that's going to buy that business, like someone else in the plumbing industry, if they acquire that business, they have to pay someone maybe 85 grand or 90 grand to do the work. Well, now you're asking them basically to pay $200,000 for something that they might earn 10 grand on. And because those customers you've built up are so closely related to you, because they're always used to doing business with the owner, are they going to stick around? And will the buyer actually be able to realize any kind of profit long term? And you can start to see how, you know, a buyer is not really going to look at that scenario very favorably. So when you realize this isn't really a business, it's more of a job, well, is there some value in that client list? There may be, but only insofar as a buyer is going to be certain that they're going to be able to generate revenue long-term from that client list. So I've got a couple of examples for you of different deals that I've helped people work on over the years. One of them in the pest control industry. So there's a couple of big national pest control companies, and they're always looking to acquire the routes established by small, you know, sort of one truck operators. And a lot of them will have a consistent format of the offers that they make. And it usually involves some kind of transition period. So for example, in one of these cases that I know about, the pest control company makes an offer to the small operator, and it's usually divided into three payments. A payment initially when the deal is done, and then the seller has to wear the company uniform, and they redecal the truck with the company logo and everything so that now it looks like the small local operator is part of the national firm. And then they have to do that for a year so that all the customers get used to the fact that they're now dealing with this bigger national firm, and then they will let the seller retire, and they'll make another payment to them. And then they'll have an employee do the route, and maybe a year after they'll make the third payment. Okay. So that's kind of sort of an example. They want to be certain that the transition is going to occur between the existing client base and their national brand. Now, these things happen a little bit differently in different industries. So another example, or sort of the fear that a lot of buyers would have, is they would say, okay, well, if I don't want the seller to stick around for a year, if I just want to take these customers and I want to serve them myself or serve them with my existing employees, how can I make sure that these customers are going to come over and do business with me? And this is the real thing that is drives fear amongst the buyers. So if you're looking for someone to just write you a check, right? So give me your customer list, I'm going to give you a check. What's going to happen is you're going to end up with a severely discounted value, because the buyer is going to be worried that these people aren't going to come over in big enough numbers. And then they're also worried about the cost that they're going to bear to deliver service to this list of people. And so it's not going to be very appealing. But if you change the way you think about it and say, instead of me selling a business or selling a list, what if I think about what I've done more like from a sales role kind of point of view? Like, if the company hired you to go out and find those customers, what would they pay you as a commission for being a sales rep, right? Maybe it's 10% or 15% of the money generated from those customers might be your commission check. So when you start to think about it in those terms, you realize, hey, the highest value that I could ever obtain from my list of customers would be if I was willing to participate with the acquiring entity in the long-term economic prospects from the list itself, right? And so if instead of looking for an amount of money to be paid upfront for your customer list, you said, look, here's the customer list. I will help you with the transition. I will introduce my customers to you. And in exchange for that, I want you to give me 10%, 12%, 15%, whatever you negotiate, from the money that you earn from these people over a predetermined period of time, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, again, whatever you negotiate. What it does is it completely changed the risk profile of this acquisition for the acquiring company. Now, instead of trying to figure out what percentage of the customers are going to come over, what amount of money are they going to spend, what's going to cost us to deliver these services, what might we make from this list? Like, there's a lot of what ifs in there, right? And everyone's always going to err on the side of, you know, lowered expectations, because, you know, people are in business to make money. You now remove all of those circumstances when you become willing to participate with them in this kind of deal. And I've seen this happen in industries like accounting practices, where the acquiring accounting firm will basically say, look, we will pay you a percentage of all the money we bill to the people on your client list for the next several number of years. And sometimes the billings increase with the acquisition, because maybe the company, the customers are growing their business, or maybe the new company can sell them more services, et cetera. And what it does is it aligns the interests perfectly between the seller of the list of customers and the acquiring company, because now the seller has every incentive to speak highly of the acquiring company, to talk with their former customers, to even go and appear maybe at events, you know, like if there's a golf tournament that, you know, all the plumbers or electricians go to every year, like the seller of the list has an interest in going there and talking with their past clients about how great it is for them to continue doing business with whoever acquired their list, right? Or whatever circumstance you're in, because the seller of the list wants people to keep doing business with them so they can continue to collect money from this transition plan. And so that is probably the way in which a seller is going to get maximum value for any kind of list. And it's really probably the only way that a buyer can make any kind of risk-managed acquisition when we're talking about a very small business like that. One that really doesn't have much in the way to sell aside from maybe a van, some tools, or an office full of furniture, and that list of customers. Anyway, John, I hope that was helpful to you. If you're out there and you're curious about small business, I talk here on the channel, I mean, I talk about buying, selling, financing, and managing small and medium-sized businesses, but you really should get on my email list, because every day I send out an email with a story, concept, something new that I'm teaching, links to new videos, or commentary and feedback about videos that I made years ago that still have important lessons. And so if you want to learn more, join the list. You can go to davidcbarnettlist.com or scan the QR code there on your screen. It'll take you right to the signup form on your phone. And with that, I'll say thank you very much. Keep the questions coming. Talk to you soon. Bye.
So, how can you learn more about buying, selling, financing, and managing small and medium-sized businesses? Easy. Go over to my blog site, davidcbarnett.com, where you can learn more about me and how I work with my clients. You can learn more about my books and courses that I've prepared for you. You can find out how to subscribe to my email list, the YouTube playlists, and more. There's literally hundreds of hours of content there, all for free, and I'd love for you to be my guest. Special thanks go to Mark Willis at Lake Growth Financial, today's video sponsor. Mark helps people better manage their personal and business finances through the Bank on Yourself insurance strategy. This is something I've done personally and I've seen others use it successfully for years. Go to newbankingsolution.com to find all the interviews I've done with Mark and learn more about the advantages of these programs. While there, sign up for a free consultation to learn what this solution might look like for you.